This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. David Lynch's movies tend to be nonlinear and often leave viewers with more questions than they do answers. Indeed, the term Lynchian has been coined to describe content that is cryptic and nightmarish yet visually gripping. Today we talk with the award-winning director, writer, and producer and creator of Blue Velvet and Mulholland Drive, among many others, and the TV series Twin Peaks. His most recent picture, Inland Empire, came out on DVD earlier this week. Later in the program, Murray Horowitz joins us for the finale of our summer movie festival. Today, everybody stays after class for the best high school movies of all time. You can email us your nomination now. The address is talk@npr.org. But first, David Lynch, if you have a question for the movie maker about what he does, why, and how, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. David Lynch is a three-time Academy Award-nominated director, chairman of the David Lynch Foundation, and he joins us now from our studios at NPR West in Culver City, California. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
How you doing there, Neil?
I'm very well. Yourself?
Good, thanks very much. Good to hear you.
Thanks. Who do you make your movies for?
I catch ideas. Some of those ideas I fall in love with. And I fall in love with them for the idea itself and for the way cinema could translate them. So I just try to stay true to the idea. So in a way, I make them for the ideas.
If you're going to make a living at it, any art is got to be at least an aspect of a commercial business. Movie, because they cost so much, tend to be have more of a commercial aspect than a lot of others. So you don't think at all about what audience might come in to pay $9.50 for this?
No, because you can't, in my opinion, second-guess an audience. The world is always changing. If you stay true to that idea, never walk away from one element until it feels correct, till the whole thing feels correct, then you have this hope that it will feel correct to others.
And this is this something that you think you started out as an artist. Do you think that this comes out of that vantage point?
It probably does. I started out as a painter, and but there's ideas for paintings, there's ideas for films, there's ideas for everything. So it's just staying true to the idea, and another way of saying it, stay true to your own voice in translating those ideas, and that seems to be the best you can do.
Mm-hmm. Is that how you explain it? There is a commercial. You have to go to places like Canal Plus, the company in France that has been important to your work. And do they want some sort of an idea about what this is going to be about?
They do and they don't. There's a certain level of trust, I think, that they have for me. But I do try to be honest and explain whatever it is I know and what I'm trying to do. But there in France, they've got a beautiful, beautiful philosophy, this auteur thing. They value the filmmaker, the artist, and they just have behind them a thing to give the artist the freedom and the means to realize those ideas.
Even if with Inland Empire, this is a film whose ideas came together sporadically over a period of several years.
Right. Now, ideas don't all come at once for a film. So they come and you write them down. They come and you write them down. And normally that process, at the end of which you get a feature film script, mm-hmm. and then you go out and start to go into work. In this case, I would get an idea, write it down, and then go shoot that idea. So it grew in a strange way, but it grew also in a pretty much the regular way.
Listeners, it's interesting. We watch the call screen every day before the show, and often people wait till we give out the phone number after we introduce the guest. And we mention your name in the billboard, and the lines lit up. So let's give listeners a chance to talk to David Lynch, 800-989-8255. You can also send us email, talk@npr.org. Let's start with Jonathan, and Jonathan's calling from Jacksonville in Florida.
Hey, David, how's it going?
Good, Jonathan. How you doing down in Florida?
I'm pretty good down here, yeah. I was in New York in the fall, and I saw Inland Empire playing in Soho there. It was a lot of fun.
Great, great, Jonathan.
Well, I was wondering, when you were younger and you were developing your creative process to try to collect ideas and themes that you wanted to use and use again in your movies, was that a smooth process or were there a lot of missteps and bumps?
No, it was a lot of, you know, struggle and trying to find my own thing. And I think that's sort of the way it goes. You learn, in my opinion, you learn so much by doing. Whatever it is you're into, just keep doing it, and then those ideas will start flowing. Now, also, I got to talk to you about transcendental meditation.
Oh, yeah?
When you transcend, when you experience the deepest level of life, that's where everything comes from. That's a field of pure creativity. You transcend, experience that, unfold that, and then you can catch ideas at a deeper level. More ideas flow. It's very, very beautiful. The flow of creativity.
I'd like to pick up on one of the things that Jonathan said, the themes that recur throughout your work. And indeed, there are themes that recur throughout your work. But I'm sure you didn't think of those themes that, here's something that can recur throughout my multi-decade career with your first picture.
There's. I always say one of my biggest influences was the city of Philadelphia. And it really went deep. And I think a lot of the things I experienced and saw and heard there fed future things.
All right. Jonathan, thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Jonathan.
Let's see if we can turn now to Megan. And Megan's with us from Sacramento, California.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Megan.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'm a really great admirer of your work, Mr. Lynch. So bear with me. I'm a little nervous here. I wanted to ask you, in your book, Catching the Big Fish, you talk about diving deep down into your subconscious mind in order to reach these big fish or great ideas. And essentially, this form of meditation allows us to travel into like the darkest parts of our mind. And yet, overall, there seems to be a stereotype in cinema in which light equals things that are good and dark equals things that are bad. And in your films, I see a sharp contrast between light and dark, both visually and thematically. And I was wondering if you agree with this stereotype of light is good, dark is bad, or does dark mean something more to you? Like, mean, does it represent a part of us that we're all just trying to reach?
That's a really good question, Megan. There's a bunch of things you touched on. Number one, if it's subconscious, it's not conscious, so you can't know it.
Right.
You when you transcend in transcendental meditation, you transcend into the unified field, a field of pure bliss consciousness, the light of 10 million suns, they say. Mm-hmm. It's pure consciousness. Okay. We all have a certain amount of it. But if you transcend, it's the only experience that lights the full brain on the EEG machine, for one thing. It's all positive. There's the brain, totally coherent. For one experience gives that to the brain. That's it. Now you start expanding your ball of consciousness because experiencing it during transcending enlivens it. It grows. That is a bright, glowing light of bliss, of inner happiness. Intelligence grows, understanding, awareness, all these things grow. Now when you go for ideas, the subconscious is becoming conscious. That ball of consciousness, awakeness, is expanding. So you're owning more and more of what used to be subconscious. Those ideas coming up, you can catch them at a deeper level. Light and dark, I understand this thing about light is positive, dark is negative. Negativity really is just the absence of unity. It's just like darkness is just the absence of light.
Right.
So there are places that are called the deep darkness, infinite silence. This infinite silence conjoined with infinite dynamism is the unified field. Perfect symmetry of infinite silence and infinite dynamism. It's bliss. It's darkness and light, you know, combined. It's totality. And any human being can experience that. In films, there should always be contrast. In stories, all throughout time, contrast, struggle, all this thing. But I always say the artist doesn't have to suffer to show suffering. You have to understand the thing. You have to be able to tell the story and be true to those ideas. But you don't have to suffer to show the suffering in a story. Have the suffering be on the screen, not in our world, not in our life.
Thanks for the call, Megan.
Thank you so much.
You said earlier that the city of Philadelphia was a big influence. You also grew up in the Pacific Northwest, a place which I guess a lot of people saw in the TV show Twin Peaks. You talked about your approach and individual approach to making movies. Television is a much more structured business, even more structured, I think, than movies. What was that experience like?
It was really exactly like making a feature film. For some reason, ABC got behind us in a very beautiful way, and we had creative freedom. They were as surprised as we were that this show took off around the world. But they did give us freedom. And that show, when you look back and see what, you know, was allowed to happen on that show, it was pretty incredible. It didn't last a long time, but it was beautiful while it lasted.
Do you think you might try it again on TV?
No, because I think now the Internet's the new TV. Internet, continuing stories, it's total freedom. Everyone and his little brother's got a television station now. You could put shows up, continue them, and go in complete freedom. And the Internet's getting better and better and better.
We're talking with movie maker David Lynch and taking your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email. The address is talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A bit later, Murray Horowitz joins us for the finale of our summer movie festival. This week, tell us your favorite high school flicks. You can email your nominee and a quick reason why. talk@npr.org. And right now we're talking with David Lynch. Who knows, maybe he'll tell us his favorite high school picture. The director of movies like Blue Velvet and Mulholland Drive has a new movie out on DVD. Inland Empire is in stores now. If you have questions for David Lynch about his movies or his career, give us a call at 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org, and you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. David Lynch, you're well known for declining to explain what your movies are about. You've said that to talk about them, for you to talk about them, would redefine them, and you want them to stand alone. Do you get tired of people coming up and asking you that question or questions? What did you mean when you did this or that?
No, they stopped doing that now, pretty much. It's really great. I think there's many different types of people out there, but some people love getting lost and figuring things out on their own, and they don't mind, you know, not knowing, and they like the intuition going, the feel, thinking. They don't mind, you know, drifting off into a world and wondering. Other people, it drives them crazy. So it's those ones that it drives them crazy. I think if they did take the DVD home, turn the lights down low, get their favorite treats together, and just drift in there, have that experience, they would come up with a conclusion for themselves. It would be very, very beautiful.
A lot of DVDs have one of those director's commentary tracks. Is there one like that on Inland Empire?
No. I think the director's commentary is one of the greatest absurdities of life. It putrefies the film. The film should stand on its own. It's finished. It's complete. It feels correct as a whole to the filmmaker. To fiddle with that, it will never be the same for people. Next time they see it, they'll remember this stupid thing they heard. And, you know, it's got to be protected. And I think stories on the sidelines could be interesting. There are those on the Inland Empire DVD. There's other additional content, but the motion picture, that experience should be protected.
Let's get Steve on the line. Steve's with us from Cambridge in Massachusetts.
Hi, Mr. Lynch. Thank you so much for making yourself available like this.
Good deal, Steve.
I'm calling to ask you about rational hidden meaning in your films. It seems that you make your films, your puzzle films, for two people in the world. Number one, yourself, and number two, the one person in the world that can figure it out. And I think one great example of that is Lost Highway and Greil Marcus's essay about the film Detour. And there's other hidden meaning in your films. For example, the very blasphemous account of the Christian gospel in Mulholland Drive. And so my question is, you obviously, and in Inland Empire, there's obviously a very a critic said this film doesn't make any sense, and you said, no, it makes perfect sense, and I believe you and I trust you. I have no idea what it is, and I'm not sure if somebody will figure it out in my lifetime. But nevertheless, if you look at your other films, there's a very real, oftentimes there's a very rational, coherent explanation of what's going on deep down, and you do this on multiple layers so much. It's so sophisticated and impressive. The only other artist I'm aware of who's been able to do this is Salvador Dali with his double image painting. So I'm wondering if you could comment how you can sustain these very multiple levels of meaning and allegory at very sophisticated levels throughout your films and keep them interesting from both a very deep rational hidden meaning level throughout basically go along with it level that you just described.
Is your name's Steve, right?
Yes.
Steve, bless your heart, pal. I love the Christian gospel. And there was, I don't even know exactly what you're talking about with this, but I love it. And I stay true to the ideas. When I get an idea, I see it, hear it, feel it. It's like, the TV, it's like it just there in your brain. There's an idea, it comes to life. You fall in love with some of these ideas. And piecing them together, even though I don't understand so much of it at first, I have this feel about them. And I start thinking about them, just like the viewer in the film. And I come to my own conclusion to what it means to me. And I stay true to that. And once I catch the meaning for me, I see how the next idea marries to that. And I see a thing happening. And all I really do is translate those ideas to a medium and try to stay true to them, try to get them up to feeling correct 100%.
Steve, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let's turn now to Marla. Marla's in Colorado.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air, Marla. Go ahead, please.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm thinking about how in so many ways you've addressed some of my question with some of the other callers. My formal education is art history, and I'm a photographer, and I'm a writer. I'm trying to be a writer as well. And I read that George Eliot said something about it's never too late to be what you might have been when she was published in her 50s or something. And I wondered what you thought about that. I find myself, kind of like what you were just saying about finding the right medium for the story. And sometimes I think, am I flowing with the creativity, or do I lack focus? And is it really too late to be what I might have been as I approach 36 and don't know that I've found an audience or even attempted to try to find an audience for my work?
You're a baby. You're doing just fine. Do not worry about a thing. Start your meditation. Start transcending. Get that flow of creativity. Bliss. You're going to enjoy the doing so much more. Your stress and tension and sorrow or depression or anything is going to start dissolving. Mm-hmm. Negativity cannot live in this light of unity.
Yes.
Transcend, build that up, get those flow of ideas. Now, a desire, I say in Catching the Big Fish, is like bait. You desire ideas. That's like a focus. So you just focus on wanting that idea, and it will in time bring ideas in. Some of them you're not going to love. Some of them you are. Write them down if you get an idea. Never don't write it down, because if you forget a good idea, you'll want to commit suicide. So you write them down. And then you'll gather, and then sometimes a picture will start forming for a painting, for a chair, for a film, and you'll be fired up and you'll be going.
Mm-hmm.
But deep within every one of us is this ocean, unbounded, infinite, eternal ocean of bliss, creativity, love, intelligence. It's the real thing. Non-relative, absolute unity, oneness, the thing. And you can experience it and grow that, and things will get better and better and better, I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm. And allow the creative process and not be concerned about finding an audience.
It will flow naturally. Don't worry about an audience. You don't know what they're going to want next year. It takes a long time to make a film.
Mm-hmm.
Stay true to yourself. Enjoy making the film. What do you care? If you don't enjoy it, don't. Why are you doing it? Are you doing it for money? What if it doesn't make a success? You'll feel terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy your work. Enjoy your work.
That sounds like you could put the Malox people right out of business.
That's the whole idea. That's the whole idea.
Thank you.
You know, we're supposed to be happy campers. We really are, and it's there for us.
Hmm. A lot of people have noticed, I mean, you're, that sunny philosophy that you have doesn't seem to be translated often into the fate of the characters in a lot of your movies.
Yeah, films, I think we all know, stories, films, music reflect the world in which we live. Our world is filled with suffering, problems, negativity, super ignorance, and the stories, they just come out of this, you know, experiencing this place. And, you know, as the world changes, so will cinema, so will, you know, all the stories.
Mm-hmm. Is there a politics to David Lynch movies?
No politics. Politics, I don't know so much about politics. I know that it's kind of a mess. It does divide us. You know, they say United States of America, and I don't see United States. I see divided states. And it's the ideas. And there is a human thing, a human struggle, a human detective wondering, looking, figuring things out. And there are answers, and they're beautiful answers for us. That's what, you know, gets me going.
Let's turn now to Greg. Greg's calling us from Missouri.
Hi. Thank you for having me on the show.
Sure.
I really loved Inland Empire, and wanted to thank you, Mr. Lynch, for all of the great extras you put on it, too.
Thanks a million. Your name's Greg?
Yeah.
Thank you, Greg.
And my question is... with Inland Empire, you scored some of the music in the film yourself, and I especially liked the songs Ghost of Love and how Polish poem was used at the end when Laura Dern finally reaches the Lost Girl. And my question about that is, what was it like for you to hear your voice singing in your own films, and are there any plans to release some of those songs on a soundtrack or something like that?
Thank you, Greg. Yeah, a soundtrack will be out in a couple of weeks. That's one thing I never wanted to do is sing, and here I am singing. But it's pretty much doctored stuff, and I'm not going to be touring. But there will be some albums, I hope, and I'm really getting into music more, and it's such a beautiful, beautiful world, the world of music. Angelo Badalamenti, bless his heart, brought me into the world of music. What a great, great human being he is. A great composer, musician. And so thank you, Angelo.
Thanks for the call, Gary. Greg, excuse me. A lot of filmmakers from time to time will just slip into a movie theater in the back row and watch an audience watch their movie. Do you ever do that?
A nightmare. I stay and make sure the sound is good. But I feel that the audience is such a delicate, it's almost like one being. And it's very interesting to think about, you know, the audience, depending on who they are, they make the screening either go very good or very bad or in the middle. The film is the same, but depending on the audience, you get different feelings in the room during and after the film. So I don't want to putrefy that atmosphere. I want it to be just, you know, what it is without any kind of added thing put in there.
We're talking with David Lynch. His most recent movie, Inland Empire, is out on DVD this week. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's turn now to Mark. Mark's with us from Medford in New Jersey.
Hi, David. Hi, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You bet, Mark.
Hi. Yeah, well, first, I mean, I have to say, like everybody else previous, that I'm a great admirer of your work, and the fact that you're doing this is very nice, taking calls and stuff.
Good deal.
My question is actually a little different than other people so far as concerning DVD distribution. You know, it's very, and you're very particular about many of your distributions, and things like Eraserhead and Dumbland are normally done through small distributors, really, mainly you yourself, whereas more films, and normally studio-oriented, but even DV things like Inland Empire are done through larger distributors. Is there a specific reason for that? I mean, do you feel that you have more, you know, more say over the distribution of your work if you do it yourself?
Yeah. When you have, it started with Eraserhead, and we just decided to, you know, we could, you know, put Eraserhead out ourselves. We learned a lot. And over time, you know, developed a pipeline to stores and, you know, pipelines to the internet. So it shows us that people more and more can take control of, you know, not only making the thing, but getting the thing out. And again, it's a kind of an old pipeline and a new pipeline for on the internet. So it's possible to do it. And yeah, you have more control. There's fewer people in the chain, and it's a lot of work, but it's satisfying.
Thanks, Mark.
Great, thank you.
All right, whose movies do you like? What pictures would you go pay $10 to go see?
Well, I just saw Bourne Ultimatum the other night at the theater, and I loved that movie. So there you go. I liked that.
Mm-hmm. Which directors, as you were a kid, and did you admire and influenced your work, do you think?
Well, big Billy Wilder, Federico Fellini, Ingmar Bergman, Alfred Hitchcock, Jacques Tati, Orson Welles. There's so many great Stanley Kubrick. All these people, you know, thrilled me to the core, and I'm not a film buff really, but sometimes we see things that really inspire us, and those film directors really did it.
Mm-hmm. It does say, you say you're not a film buff. It sounds like you spend an awful lot of time watching movies.
No, not so much. When I went to the American Film Institute, I did, during the first year, see a lot of movies because they just brought in one great one after another. You could hardly stay out of mm-hmm. the theater. And I liked, you know, the art house experience, and it's sad that many, many of them disappeared. But now, more and more, there's a growing audience for, you could say, alternative cinema, and it's pretty hopeful.
And as you know, in just a couple of minutes, Murray Horowitz is going to join us from AFI Silver Theater. And we're going to be talking about the best high school movie of all time. What's your favorite high school movie?
Well, I thought about that, and it's going to be Rebel Without a Cause.
Rebel Without a Cause. That's a high school picture, you figure?
I figure it is.
David Lynch, thanks so much for being with us, and good luck with the DVD.
It was great talking to you, Neil, and goodbye to everybody.
David Lynch, an award-winning director, writer, and producer, the chairman of the David Lynch Foundation based in Hollywood, California. His movie, Inland Empire, now out on DVD. For more information, go to www.davidlynch.com. And he joined us today from NPR West, our studio in Culver City, California. When we come back, the big finish to our summer movie festival. Murray Horowitz is here. So what are your favorite movies about high school? Get on the line, 800-989-8255, or email us your pick and a brief reason why, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.